Today's guest is Donna Ferris, and she is an author of a book I just finished reading called We've Got to Stop Meeting Like This. And it was amazing. It's a memoir about 3 years in her life. And oh my gosh, I think you're going to love this episode. You're going to love Donna. And I hope we tried to not give away any of the like things in the book, but it's hard to talk about a book and not give away some of the stuff that's in it. But it was so cool because it's, I think, the first time she sent me a copy of her book. And it was the first time that I've read somebody's book in advance that was a memoir. And so I knew coming into this interview a lot about her life. And I was so excited to meet her and to have this conversation. So she had the most hellacious, with the lack of a better word, 3 years, a lot of loss in her life. And it started with a divorce on page one, or a near, I mean, it wasn't page one where the divorce happened, but it was like clear that something was going to happen in that marriage from page one. So anyways, but also death, so sad, but she is amazing. And the person that she became in the process of this is nothing short of amazing to read. So inspiring, and how yoga helped her. While she was going through a lot of this, she was going through yoga training and then went on to yoga therapy training, which I didn't even know existed, but obviously it makes sense. So, because yoga is kind of a healing practice. So it makes sense that there would be some sort of therapy that's associated with the practice. So anyways, it's a great book. I highly recommend it. The link is in the show notes to go and get it. She also has an audio version. So if you're into audiobooks, she narrates it. So pretty cool. So without further ado, let's get to the episode with Donna, where we chit chat. And it's a little bit of a long one, but it's so worth it.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And I have with me today author Donna Ferris. Actually, she does more than write books. I will get into that. But I'm going to hold up, if you're on my YouTube channel, her book. And it's called We've Got to Stop Meeting Like This. And I just finished it. And it is amazing. It's the tagline is a memoir of missed connections. But that really doesn't tell the whole story of what her 3 years in her life was like. And I'm really excited to have her here because I think one of the things she wrote to me is that she is an expert on resilience. And for anybody who has had loss in their life, Donna, her story will inspire you. And so I highly recommend it. And I'm really excited to have her here. So welcome to the program, Donna.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love your show. And it's just an honor to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I almost feel like I'm meeting a celebrity because I read your book.
I'm not.
So excited to get on.
But thank you. But yeah. I'm not.
I feel like I know you. I mean, you know, after reading your story. So why don't you just give a little summary of what that story is about?
Sure. So I started out this story married, had been married for 20 plus years. You know, thought I was in a happy marriage. I think a lot of us do, even though there's cracks around the edges, but we're kind of making it work. And, My family will say to me after the fact, and said to me after the fact, we thought everything was okay. Everything on Facebook and Instagram looked good, but it wasn't. And, you know, I was looking for something. I wanted to find some, you know, purpose to my life. So I went to Kripalu, which is a beautiful yoga retreat in Stockbridge, Mass. Pretty well known. I think it just got named number one yoga resort in the world again. And I went there to find myself.
You live in New Jersey, or where?
I live right outside of Philly. So
outside,
yeah,
Philly.
I live in,
okay.
Yeah, so Westchester, and okay, so it was right. Like a 5-hour drive. One of my husband's friends' wives took me up, and instead of watching the Super Bowl, we went to a yoga retreat. And
yeah, and I remember in the book you didn't feel like you fit in. So it was like that was your first introduction to it, or had you been dabbling in yoga? Or? What?
Yeah. And thank you for asking that. Cause what's funny about me is I thought I knew what I was doing. Right. So I thought I had yoga because I was taking it at the Y, and I was doing, you know, videos with Jane Fonda and, you know, Tracy Austin and all these different people. And I thought I knew what yoga was, and I got there and it was very different. It was much more about stillness and, you know, a little bit more about strength and, you know, this resilience idea and all these different things. And I just wasn't ready for it. It was also a lot about kale, which I did not like at all.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the food was very vegetarian. Yeah.
Yeah. You said even the non-vegetarian had something that wasn't like what you would consider meat. I remember that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it was so funny because when you said I'd never done a 90-minute yoga class, that's what happened to me when I went to Greece for my first yoga retreat in October. I was and I have never done so little and sweated so much. And it wasn't hot yoga. I think it was like, oh my gosh, I had the same experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I loved hearing about that, about your experience as well. And you think you know what you're doing, right? I mean, I thought I knew what I was doing. I was very, you know, very confident and just got dashed quickly. And, you know, I didn't have any caffeine for that class either. So for me, that was a huge deal because it was an early morning class. But, you know, as I went through, there was a lot of things that happened that broke me open in that time. They had something called a sharing circle that I shared something that I never shared to anybody before, which I hope you will read the book to find out what that was. But I shared something I had never shared before, which was fundamentally part of my personality and many women's personality in our age group.
You're talking about from childhood?
Yeah, from childhood. And the fact that I'd never shared it before, and then suddenly sharing it and then having, you know, it just received and not judged, just started me on this path of like, okay, I want more of this. Like this is what I want. I want more people around me that aren't going to judge me for who I really am and allow me to be who I really am. And that got me into yoga teacher training, got me into yoga therapy training, which is a little longer, and then really fundamentally changed everybody around me over time, which is what I really wanted, but I didn't know how to get there. So in that
Meanwhile,
process,
you're working the whole time. You had a corporate job. Yeah. You were in sales and traveled a lot as like in finance, right?
In banking.
In finance. Yeah. And then, yeah. So that was so like impressive to me that you had two kids you were raising, two daughters.
Yep.
I have two daughters, that you were juggling all these things, traveling, plus you were going to yoga training.
Yep.
In the cracks of life. And I think you chose the training that would fit into your schedule. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did you choose that because you think you needed that at the time? Was that?
Yes.
Part of it?
I mean, yeah, my oldest daughter was going off to college and we were incredibly close. So it was, I signed up for the training, the initial training in May, and she was leaving in September. So I was looking at my life, my marriage, and saying, you know, and I had a younger daughter, but she, you know, she was much more into technology and not so much into, you know, hanging out with me as much, although we have a great relationship. So it was really hard to lose my oldest daughter at the time. And so I got into this yoga teacher training thinking, oh, the only thing I need to solve is that. And then my husband, I find out my husband's cheating on me in a very unique way, I found out. And he was doing a very unique thing at the time. And it was just, it broke my whole world open. And so what I started to do is blog about that. It took me a little while to do it, but I blogged about the, you know, going through a divorce and online dating and finding a new love while taking yoga teacher training, learning about love and, you know, all the things, you know, how the body teaches us what we're really feeling and all of those types of things. So that was what I initially thought the book was going to be. It was called 12 Months to Zen-ish, right? And that was the title of the original book. And I had a draft ready to go, and then my life changed fundamentally again. So, you know, and then I lost two people that are very close to me in about 3 months of time. So I had to, you know, again, say to myself, okay, I really don't understand what's going on. I thought I had it all together. I thought I had it all figured out. And then I had to start back at, you know, ground zero again and try to figure out how to use those yoga ideas and yoga, you know, all the different yoga ideas. But also, you know, yoga was just kind of a gateway for me because it brought me to Buddhism and all kinds of different wisdom theologies. And you know, I was able to apply that to what I went through and what I was going through and try to find a way out. I start the book with a quote that basically says, I need to find the way out. You know the way out. I'm going to follow you to find the way out, find my own way out. And that's really what the book's about is I kept finding myself in it, like the itsy bitsy spider at the bottom of the well. And each time I had to roll my way out of it. And I'm hopeful. And you know, some of my favorite comments from people have been, I'm going to find my way out now. You know, I didn't think there was a way out of my grief or my loss. You know, divorce is a loss too. Mm-hmm. Losing children is a loss. I've had quite a few people that have lost children that have come back to me with those comments. And if that happens, that'd be amazing if people are able to see a way out for themselves.
Yeah. There's some powerful stuff, which I can reference that was like crazy. So I'm kind of thumbing through it right now. I did some highlighting, but yeah, I just have to say, when I first started the book, I connected with you immediately because, first of all, the French vanilla cream at
right?
Wawa, those machines. Whenever I go on a long distance trip, because they have a lot of caffeine in them, they're also high in sugar. But I love those so much.
Yes.
So those are my go to drink.
Yep.
And then when you said your husband said it's colder than a witch's tit out here. My dad always said that. And just recently, one of my friends from college said, oh my God, your dad was, I remember when you told me that, I'd never heard that before. And so I was like, oh my gosh, soul sister, because you know, you had that same comment, but yeah. So there was a thing in here about, and I'm trying to look for it, but it was when your yoga teacher asked you about karma. Like that was like crazy about, like sometimes you're supposed to, well, you explain it.
Yeah. This is a great idea. So this is a great philosophy. This is from Erin Byron. She has an amazing book called Yoga for the Creative Soul, which I highly recommend. And I still actually meet with her once a week in this group that she has, and she's on Facebook. So I wanted to say that the idea of burning karma, so that when we go through things, sometimes, you know, can feel like we're going through a really difficult time, and it can be burning off karma, our own karma, which is our own deeds, our own things that we've done. It can also be the deeds of our parents or our ancestors. And basically you can go through this period of burning karma so that you can, you know, improve your life. And what I came back with karma is sometimes karma is just your decisions, right? I made a decision to do this. It wasn't a great decision. I have to live with that. And then I have to live with the results of that. And then I level up from that experience, right? So I, you know, say in my case, maybe I married the wrong man. You know, I had to live with that decision. I had to learn from that decision. I had to deal with all of the difficulties of that decision. And then I level up to this next level. It's that kind of idea, right? And that sometimes we go through these really difficult periods, but we have to think of them as burning karma for our lives or our ancestors' lives so that we can, you know, get more enlightenment and move on. And then you share that with everyone around you. So, you know, I think of it this way, like it was really important for me to deal with my childhood trauma so that I could be a better parent so that my kids wouldn't have that same trauma, you know, passing down to them. So every time we work on these things, it may feel, sometimes I think we worry about being selfish in doing it, but it's really important because the more we love ourselves and the more that we're able to show love to others, the better the world around us will be, right? And we can see that in our lives today. You know, when people are acting out and doing difficult things in the world, in the global world, you know, it's because a lot of the things that probably are happening inside. Not that I want to talk about that, but it's true. I think we, you know, most of the negative things that I've done to other people have been, related to how I was feeling about myself, my childhood trauma, and drinking. And something that I talk a lot about now is I don't drink anymore, which is the other piece of the puzzle for me. But
yeah, such a big part of your life.
Yeah. It really was. I mean, yeah. I was the pusher. I was the, I was the entertainer. I was the shot lady, I would be called. I'd come out with the shots of tequila. Yeah. I was a big part of my life for a long time. And COVID basically allowed me to take a break from that. And that's really how I got sober. So I talk a lot about that in the book. And then I also talk about it. I've been writing about it quite a bit recently, which has been really helpful.
Yeah, I'll try to tiptoe around the stuff that, so not to give away anything from the book, but what I thought was interesting is that who you're now with, it was like so interesting that you, there was a period of time that you weren't right for him, you know, that you weren't in a place to receive him.
No.
And that's so interesting because, you know, my story with reconnecting with my college boyfriend. And I look back and that's so true. That's so true. These people come in our lives and it's not the time. It's not the right time, but we have this connection and it's so cool that you're together. I didn't even know that until we just talked before we got on the episode. So yeah, that's so cool. So anyone who picks up the book, it's kind of,
it's
happy ending.
It's got, it's a romance. It's got a happy ending with a romance. Yeah. Yes. And, just to add a little woo-woo to this, my Reiki teacher, who's also has served as my psychic, and that's in the book as well, she would say that we're all kind of we all have been in past lives, and these connections that we've had have always been there, right? So we keep running into these people over and over in our lives. And sometimes it's the right time, sometimes it's not the right time, but that attraction and that love is always, going on. You're always, always have that love. It doesn't die. And just so you know, I have an MBA, I have a CFA, I'm a finance person, I'm an executive, and I believe in psychics and past lives and all the woo-woo. So it took me a long time to get here and to be able to say that publicly, frankly, because it's not always, it's not always accepted. But it is, for me, that explanation and that understanding has been really helpful for me in looking at my relationships. And if they end, either because somebody passes or because they end, because sometimes they do, I can always look at it and say the love didn't die, right? And we might get an opportunity in another life to come back to it, which I think is just incredibly reassuring for me.
Yeah. Well, I think with the whole woo-woo thing, when you start to have lived experiences that are like, what? Then you become a believer in it, right? It's like you might have the science kind of mind, and there is science behind woo-woo anyways. So
there is.
Yeah.
It's energy.
And the whole, the Reiki thing that happened when you went to the second level training, it's like, that was crazy.
It was really crazy. And I didn't ask for it. And in fact, I didn't want it. I didn't really want to get that, I wanted one of the connections. I didn't want the other one. The other one kept coming, and it continued to come at me, which is life, right? Things continue to come at you. You don't, Pema Chodron says, things will keep coming until you learn the lesson. She says it much more eloquently than that, but it's basically that, you're not done with it yet. You have to kind of learn your lesson still. So.
But processing that is, and first of all, I think that offered some closure for you. So I think that was amazing.
Absolutely.
But I think, that explained why you chose Jim, that explained so much of why you ended up in divorce. That explained, how you were so burdened with that. And so I think that helps when there's like reason behind something, when there's like, yes, it all makes sense now,
Exactly. And it also allows me to forgive people, right? Because because it lets me realize my part in it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It wasn't really right. I wasn't the easiest person either. I mean, we all kind of walk around thinking we're great people, but we're not either. I'm not either. I'll say I'm not either. You probably are awesome. I am not always the easiest person, and I know that about myself, So, and I think what I love about writing a memoir is that, and Mary Carr says this really well. She says, the first go with your memoir, the first draft of your memoir is everybody else's fault. Everything that happened to you is everybody else's fault. Throw it down, write it. The second draft is usually everything is my fault. So everything is the writer's fault. I've made mistakes. I'm the worst person in the world. The third draft is is closer to the truth. I'm not saying it's, you know, I'd like to think it's the truth, but you never know. I mean, I think there's always different views, but you can take a little bit of both. And I think for me, I'm hopeful that this memoir will get out to many hands and will help a lot of people. But even if it doesn't, it helped me close a lot of things. It helped me. I would never have had the experiences of forgiveness and, you know, just feeling that I can wrap things up a little bit more and walk away from certain parts of my life. It doesn't mean that I don't have grief days. I do. It doesn't mean that I don't miss people. I do. But I'm able to have those days, but then move forward and have a life that's filled with joy, because I know those days, that any day can be your last, you know, or their last. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to take, you know, to take care with the one, the, your loved ones and your days, because, you know, they're precious. They're incredibly precious.
Yeah, definitely. I love too that you were so, it was like you were, the reader was in your head. Like we could hear your thoughts. I don't know if you ever, and this just came up, but did you ever see the series Dexter?
He was actually, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a serial killer, but he killed bad people, which made him okay. Right. But it was kind of narrated. So you were in his head and it was like you really understood him. And so I loved how, you know, it was, you were just so normal, like the things you thought we all think, you know, when you're talking about how, you know, you were comparing yourself to the other yoga people and you were this kind of frumpy, overweight, you were describing yourself. But through everything, you were super honest and so detailed. It was so descriptive and so felt like I was there, you know, just like to the dog and licking your hand and that it felt like salt. What is it? Sandpaper. Yes.
Sandpaper.
That's so true.
So thank you for that. That's something I had to learn in writing. So I think to anybody considering writing a book, we were talking earlier, like I think everybody has a book in them, you know, thinking about how you write, thinking about writing the scene. So I had to take a lot of time with that. Like, how do I write the scene so it's not me telling you everything? And that was a real conversion from blog voice, which is all, you know, very much about what I think and all my words. And, you know, I think this and that and this and that and this and that, to I have to create scenes with each one of those experiences. Here's what I felt. Here's what this was what was happening. Here's the light that was coming through the window. So it's totally doable. That conversion from that blog voice to the scene voice. And it's just part of writing and it all can be learned.
And that's where I think, you know, you used a blog, but I think people just should start journaling more, just writing down, you know, that's something that I haven't done enough of, you know, it's a good example of just, you know, journal and be really super descriptive on, you know, what's around you. I'll use all your senses. And
exactly. Use the five senses.
Book. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then find places that if you want to release what you're writing, you know, Elephant Journal's a great spot. That's where I did a lot of my. Yeah. They have a writing academy, which I've helped to be a teacher's assistant with. I highly recommend that as a place to kind of submit, because they'll take anything. They won't necessarily publish it, but they will look at anything, and the editors will typically give you some feedback, you know, so, and they'll give you a couple turns on the piece, and then they may not publish it, but then you will get this criticism, which is really, really helpful to letting you know how to craft your voice. And I've written probably 30 or 40 articles for them now. And then I've now been published elsewhere, but I still come back to that place. It's just a really great place to kind of work and share your voice. They do. It's elephantjournal.com, and they have their own platform, but they do interact with social media, but they mostly have their own platform now. But I highly recommend that as a place to kind of play with your craft, you know, and then you start to build people that read you. And that's really helpful. Like if you're going to be talking about things that are really close to you and you want to, expose yourself, but you kind of are exposing yourself to the world, or, you know, letting it out. It's nice to have that happen. And then people come back and say, hey, I understand. I felt the same way. It's very healing to have that process happen. And I highly recommend going out there, even though it feels a bit like you're jumping off a cliff. You know, they really are there with open arms to hug you as you come down. So,
yeah, I feel the deeper the vulnerability, the deeper the connections.
Agreed.
You know, I mean, look at Brené Brown and some of the
stuff. She's amazing.
You know, yeah.
She's amazing.
And Mel Robbins. I love her. Her emails when I don't ever miss reading because she's just so, oh my gosh, she says things and I'm like, oh, I can't believe you said that.
That's
so, and it's so real.
And if you're in it, and if you believe in the energy, right, if you're feeling a certain way, probably other people are at the same time. Yeah. Like, you know, I think you post every day, I post every day, and I try to think about how am I feeling and then what resonates with me today, and I post that, right? Because we're all kind of in the same spot. We're having a lot of the same experiences. And sometimes people just don't know how to express that. And giving them, a quote or a picture or something that how you're feeling is helping them express it too. And that's a lot of it, right? If we can express our feelings and understand what's going on in our bodies, again, we will, act better around the people around us and, show more love as opposed to, denying what we're feeling, which can be really, really harmful to ourselves. That's why we numb. That's why we do a lot of things like eat too much and drink too much and harm ourselves in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. So I just, this came up, your dogs.
Oh my gosh.
What was interesting too, is that you adopted two dogs during your grieving process.
I did.
And they kind of saved you in a way. I mean,
and my kids.
Yeah.
And my kids.
Yeah.
Like the first dog that we adopted, Yogi Bear, which we did not know his name was Yogi Bear, and I wasn't ready to adopt him. I wanted I was a single mom at the time. So I wanted this big dog that was going to make me safe when I took my walks and would, bark at everybody. And here my kids fall in love with this 18-pound Shih Tzu, who barks a lot, don't get me wrong, but, is not going to save anybody. And, I was sure that I just wasn't, this wasn't right for me. And then we look up the name when we looked at the roster of adopted dogs, and his name was Yogi Bear, and he had been surrendered by his owner after a long time. And for me, just being a yogi and just being surrendered by my husband, I felt a very strong connection to that dog, who is struggling now. So I'm hopeful that, I know it. And we got that dog in 2016, and my kids said to anyone who would listen, this was the best thing about 2016, which, I totally understand because we, that was really the first year of the divorce. So the dog, Yogi has been a joy. Aww. I know. It's hard. And then the second dog I was fostering. So I started fostering dogs. And he was about the third or fourth foster I did, and I failed. I adopted him. And he tried
interesting. So, you have to read the book to know, but that universe, isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
What it can do for you because you loved that dog.
Yeah. I love that dog. That dog, I think, had a little mystical connection too. I think it was, it was a lot. He's a lot like my first dog that I ever had when I was growing up. So, he's still kicking. He's doing great. He's still into everything like he always is. But dogs are wonderful. I mean, animals in general are wonderful, but, I think there's a connection certainly with dogs that I have. They're just unconditional lovers.
Yeah. They sensed your sadness when you were upset.
Every minute.
Yeah.
I can't lie with my dog. I can't say that I'm fine when Jake's around. Jake will absolutely tell everybody that I'm upset. If I'm sitting on a phone call for work, because a lot of times he's not here today because I didn't want him to interrupt us, but he'll if I get upset, he'll start to bounce around the room, and I'm like, I can't, can't deny it. He's like freaking out. Yeah. So they are just great, and they're great teachers because they're instinctive and they can't help their reactions. And watching my dogs helps me be more kind to myself with my reactions, right? Because they can't help it. We don't blame them when they go running after a squirrel. We get a little upset because we don't want to, lose them. But we don't blame them for it. And when I have the same reactions over things that upset me, I need to be kinder to myself. I have to figure out how to best react to it. But, how many times, at least for me, I'll get mad at myself because I get upset about something. Well, of course I got upset about that. I can't help getting upset. I can help, not sending the mean email or saying the thing that's going to hurt somebody because I'm upset, but I can't kick myself because I got upset. I mean, of course I got upset. That was hurtful. So yeah. It's just really helpful. Dogs are really helpful because for me, it's just, they're just constantly teaching me, you know, to trust myself and to not be mean to myself because I can't help it sometimes.
Yeah, they were like therapy dogs without even being therapy dogs, right?
Yeah, I think they would flunk any therapy school. But they certainly were. Yeah, they certainly were. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of therapy, there was this really great, I loved this that I highlighted. That I'm not sure who this was. Was this your, I think this was your therapist. And she explained that time spent in therapy and self-discovery can lead us to believe we are beyond basic emotions.
Yep.
So
new age guilt.
That's so true because new age guilt. You want to
explain that phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have these emotions because we know better, right?
Yeah, we think we're above it. We think that because we've done, you know, we've read every Tara Brach book and Brené Brown book, and, you know, we have all this understanding of why we do what we do, you know, instincts get turned off, and that's not true. I mean, we're going to have these feelings, you know, that people, you know, people are going to do things that are going to, like I said, like going to be hurtful, or, you know, we're going to sense their energy is hurtful. And, you know, we are just trying to protect ourselves. And again, we don't have to act on it, you know, but we should not be surprised we have the feelings, I guess, you know, and not give ourselves, you know, not kick ourselves for having them, think that we're bad because we get upset, or, you know, like, I think at that point I was like, why am I not able to not be completely set to the floor, knocked to the floor because of all this grief I was going through? I thought I was going to be somehow, because of yoga therapy, I was going to be better through it. And no. You know, grief is a real thing. It's a person that's been, you know, knocked out of your life, and you're never going to replace them. You know, that hole is always going to be there. And until we accept that hole's there and that we have feelings around it, we're not going to heal from it. And it doesn't mean that you ever stop being sad about them, but it doesn't take up all of your day. You know, as you begin, I think that's the thing. And, you know, I love the analogy with grief of the shipwreck, right? And I'm sure you've heard it, you know, initially when it happens, it feels like the waves are all the way up to your neck, you know, you're completely consumed with the wreck, you're completely consumed with the situation. And then over time, the waves start to recede, and you don't feel it all the time. And you feel it, you know, once a week, or, you know, anniversaries. So over time, it gets easier, but the waves are still there, they're going to still come back in some ways. But if you know the tools to handle it, you know, it becomes just another day, you know,
right.
I wrote an article recently about this, you know, it was the first, this last February 11th was the first time I'd experienced this anniversary of this person that died sober. And drinking, I'd always drank to kind of feel better and to numb it, but it actually just postpones it, right? It doesn't really get rid of the feelings, it just numbs you. So I was able to kind of look at the day and say, you know, these are the things I'm going to do today to make myself feel better. I walked my dog, I took a bath, we sat and watched the sunset, and I was able to look at it and say, this is just a day, and I can take care of myself during this day, and then I can move on. Doesn't mean I wasn't sad, doesn't mean I didn't miss him.
Yeah.
But he would want me to be happy. And I need to internalize that and do the best I can to do that. Because life is short. I learned that. Yeah. Life is short.
Yeah. And back to the woo-woo, and you can read about it in the book, but there were definitely signs that he wanted you to be happy. So
he comes back, you know, he comes back a lot. I had cardinals yesterday. I had bluebirds on my walk this morning. I think these are signs.
And I'm
okay if you don't.
Yeah, your daughter, he came to her when she was having.
And he still does. He still
anesthesia.
Does.
Anesthesia? That's crazy.
Yep. And I had never told her that story. And it was, you know, again, it was just, you know, he was making sure that I told her the story. You know, you know, you have to believe in magic a little bit. I think that's part of grief. I think you have to believe that it's not over. And like I said, love doesn't die, and they will find you. They can get to you. They are in your life still. They still care.
Yeah, there was another quote that I highlighted.
Yes, please.
It was instead.
It's an honor, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it really is.
Like, when the things resonate with me, I feel like they need to be shared. You know, they need to. They'll resonate with somebody else.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, instead of post-traumatic stress, Some people can experience post-traumatic growth.
Yes. That's Maria Soros. Yes. I highly recommend her book, A Short Course in Happiness. See me, I talk about everybody else's books.
Yeah. But I've read that.
Oh,
that's so good.
So good. Yeah. That's so good. And that's another one that I highly recommend. But Maria Soros, Short Course in Happiness, she had a brother who died young of a really rare cancer. And so she went through it. And so she does this, she has that book, but she also does a workshop at Kripalu, and actually does it on her site too. But it's all about, finding a way to find 3% happiness each day as you go through these problems. And that can help you just tip your mindset a little bit more towards hope. And then you can start to look back. It's not going to happen right away, but start to look back at what this loss has taught you. And we don't really grow all that much when we're not facing difficulty. Mm-hmm. Because we don't get pushed, right? We don't get pushed to try new things. We don't get pushed to take on new advice. We don't get pushed in any way. We're just kind of bumping along, which is a great thing. Don't get me wrong. I really don't want anything bad to happen. But when it does, it gives us the opportunity to kind of learn new things, learn new behaviors, and really take nothing for granted, which is all very positive. And then that can help you become resilient for the next thing, because no matter what, life does keep handing us these things, and we have to get better at them. You know, a big thing for me with grief was, I still had two kids and two dogs at the time, and I knew that I couldn't fall apart because I didn't want them to lose me too. So because, if you don't manage your grief, they call it complicated or a traumatic grief can turn into cancer and heart disease and a lot of things within 12 to 15 months. So I didn't want that to happen. So it was really, really important. I committed really heavily to finding a way out. And like I said, Maria Soros's ideas about being able to turn this into a positive over time, didn't happen all at once, but over time was really, really impactful for me. It saved me.
Yeah. And I think with children, when they watch a parent go through something and come out the other side and they show resilience.
Yes.
That is modeling. I mean, that's a role model that is a super positive, even though you might be feeling like you're falling apart at the time, but yes. You didn't ultimately. Yes. And that I'm sure that they respect you 10 times more for the difficulties that you encountered and recovered from and what you learned in the process. I mean, the person that started this book is not the person that finished the book. It's like such a, a growth. And there's one more that I love. It'd probably be a really good thing to end on. Although I did want to talk about your online dating because
I'd love that.
You tend
it's so
to,
fun.
Like, you really had some, you really were good at that.
I loved online dating.
A lot of people and I know you didn't talk, you probably had a lot of dud dates, but I don't know. It seemed like pretty good. Dating in a second.
Go ahead.
This was near the end. From the dark entangled branches emerges a butterfly. The obstacles have been relentless, but now is not the time to look back upon them. The more pressing question is, where will you go with your new set of wings?
Yeah, I love that.
Your daughters watched that.
They did. And I think you do have to think, as a parent, right? You have to think about how you're modeling your life. Not that I necessarily did. And I made some mistakes. I mean, I think my post-divorce period was probably, I'm just coming back to the online dating. There was definitely some difficult, I'm not happy with some of my behaviors. I got very self-absorbed. I think it's hard not to right after divorce. I mean, I'm sure, maybe you relate. It's just such an open wound.
Yeah. How I told my kids. Their dad and I were separating. That was not, I wished I had done it differently. I wish we had sat down as a family to talk about it.
Yep. Me too.
But I was a little self-absorbed then and what I wanted, and it was not good. And those are things that stay with kids forever. They remember that moment, you know, that mm-hmm. their life
they do
like that. So
they do. And it was hard. I think there's things I wish I had done differently. And I cop to that in the book for sure. I think they tell you things I didn't know enough about what to do. And I was in such an instinctive mode at the time. So I just did whatever I was feeling, in yeah. hindsight, you know,
reaction.
I'm thankful that my kids have gotten to hear me say that, right. That I wish I had done it differently, you know, taking more care, you know, with that relationship, and also taking more care, you know, with online dating to yeah. come back to it, yeah. because, you know, I think I didn't bring any men really into their lives, but I think I was very absorbed in that too. You know, because after you're in a relationship so long, And then to have my husband cheat. And then I was like, I have never done anything. I had never cheated. I'm not saying I haven't, you know, I think you always have these people that are around you that you might have, you know, flirted with, but I never took it anywhere. And then to suddenly have this open up, it was a lot of fun for me. And I was good at, because of my job, good at weaning out a lot of people. So I weeded out a lot of people mm-hmm. that probably would have been problematic and bad dates, and tended to, at the time, and I don't know how it is now, but at the time was able to find, you know, men that were fun to hang out with for a little mm-hmm. bit. I mean, I didn't want to date a lot of them, but it was interesting. I just took them as kind of like little meetings, you know, that I had to do for a half an hour. And if it didn't work out, it was nice to meet you. You know, that yeah. was kind of how I saw yeah. it, which I really liked.
Yeah. And just so people know, you were in your early 50s when all this happened.
Yeah.
Right?
I was yeah. 51, 52. Yeah. And then when I went back out again, I was 55.
Yeah.
So I, yeah. you know, I did it twice in that time frame. I never want to go back out because I'm madly in love with the person I'm with now. But you know, I think to those who are worried about it, it can be really fun if you take it the right way. I think it's a way to meet people, not necessarily the person that you're going to be with forever. And I think that for me, that's kind of how I looked at it. I didn't really expect to be with somebody for long periods
yeah,
of time.
And I like that you were real clear about the person that you wanted, because you didn't necessarily have that person that had a lot of those kind of similar interests when you chose your mate the first time.
No.
And
no.
So that was kind of cool that you were really clear on that and being
yeah.
kind of shared interests. Yeah. And you know, I kept waiting for the catfish or the, you know, the one that was like said he wasn't married and he was, but yeah, you didn't have those in there.
No, I had one guy that turned into a woman. That was interesting.
Oh.
Like that. So I never found out what happened with that one. That was interesting.
Oh, that's right. The picture changed or something.
The picture yeah. changed. Yeah, I was yeah. like, that's weird, you know? And yeah. then they continued to try it, which I don't really put in the book because you have to kind of take out a lot of things so yeah. that it flows. But they did try to, you know, reconnect with me. And I was like, I don't know. This is a little odd. Not that, you know, I have any problem with that, but it was just, you know, this is probably not, you're probably not who I think you are right now. One other thing I do love that in that section of the book, I read an article at that time from somebody who had been married a long time and said, you know, a lot of times we feel like we're not good at relationships because we get divorced after a long period of time. But what I loved about what she said is she said, no, you're actually really good at them. Because if it wasn't working, right, or if it wasn't the right one for you anymore, but you still were able to make it work, that means you're incredibly good at relationships, right? And modifying. And so then what if you took those talents to somebody new that was actually right for you?
Yeah.
So I do want to say that in case it helps anybody out
yeah.
there, because I think that's
yeah
that
resonated
that was,
with me so much, because somebody said the same thing to me when I got divorced after 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, I was feeling such a failure, and they said, no, you're so successful. So many people don't even last 10 years.
That's right.
I was like, oh, you know, that was such a good reframe for me.
Yeah. And such an easy turn, but it just was so helpful for me. So I did want to say that
yeah,
it came
good,
to my mind. So I always think when things come to my mind, it's the universe telling me that I got to say it mm-hmm. so that make sure that it might help somebody on the phone or somebody
yeah.
that listens to the podcast.
Well, and maybe failure is more of the other is staying longer in a relationship that isn't right for you, because clearly
that's right.
you weren't happy in that marriage, you know?
No.
Yeah. So.
No. And I was talking to somebody recently that, you know, came from the other side. So that had cheated with somebody. And I said, you know, and I think got stuck a little bit in the book because of that. And I said, look, keep reading, because I think what I hope comes out in the book is that I was as much to blame for the cheating I had withdrawn from the relationship.
Yes, absolutely.
I wish that, you know, we had had a conversation before cheating had happened. Yes. And then we could have both said, hey, this is not working. Let's just go. But that said, I know I had a part in it. You know, yes. The front of my book talks about like how I was feeling and how I felt. And that's not fair. I wasn't fair to my ex-husband that I was feeling that way.
Yeah.
No one should have to be with, you know, somebody that's just tolerating them.
Yes.
So, you know, I think we both have to come to the relationship and be honest and vulnerable about how we feel. And if it's not working, it's not working.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think you got into the mode that I got into where it was like a business, right? We were co-owners of this family and we had our, you know, our employees were our children and we had the business, we had the, like, you know, the houses, the all the financial arrangements and our jobs. And it was like, I felt like we were kind of business besties, but not romantic and aligned in that sense. So,
And that shift, you know, that balance between the romance and the business had gotten way off. I entirely agree. Yeah. And it was hard to unravel that. I think, and I think we probably both had times where we wanted to unravel it, but just the sheer size of that was too much for us to manage it. We just couldn't, you know, and I think a lot of people feel that way. I think it's hard not to, but I have to say, for me anyway, it was important to do it, and everything got better after that. Not initially, it was hard at first, but it got a lot better. And even though I had another situation, you know, kind of fall apart, it still is better, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I think to find yourself, you have to detach from the things that, you know, it's almost like you don't see yourself as a unique individual anymore. You see yourself as a wife, as a mother, as a this, as a that. And I always felt too, that if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Just because we're separating doesn't mean we're going to, like, you know, so, you know, we find ourselves, maybe we come back together. If we don't find ourselves, we find somebody else. And hey, we make other people's lives happier, because, which is just an expansion, right?
Of sorts,
which happens, and it's good.
Yeah. And I think it was hard for me, though. I mean, you know, when he had somebody else, right? And so he got to the happy place much quicker than I did. But, you know, I wish him well. The more he's happy, right? And the more the father of our children is happy, the better your kids are going to be.
Yeah.
So I'm always, you know, about that. Let's make everybody happy, because it affects everybody else, right? I want my kids to be happy and loved and taken care of.
How are your kids, by the way?
They're good. They're really good.
Thank you for asking. Are they still single?
One is getting married next year. The other one's still single. She's younger. So they're good.
That's
you know, they have a mom that's, that's in their lives a lot, and they're doing well with the book. Their names are changed in the book.
Yes.
It would be hard for you to find them, which was on purpose.
Yeah.
But they're great.
That's good.
I'm really blessed. I think, you know, because of my past with my mother, it was really important to me to be the best mother I can be. Mm-hmm. It's a constant thing. I don't always, I mean, like all of us, I'm sure we fail a lot. I fail a lot. It's really important to me. That's, I think if I can be measured by that, that's the most important thing in my life.
Yeah.
Is them.
Yeah. I asked that, you know, I thought of them because I think of the weddings. So after I got married, my ex-husband hadn't been married, yet or remarried, but, we had two weddings. But we were really good friends. And
oh, that's good.
You know, weddings can be a nightmare. It sounds like you guys are in good places. And so,
we're okay. I think we both have figured out how to be around the kids. But I think it's always a thing. I won't say that. I think it's important to recognize that it's a thing. I think, and for me, that's the most important thing. So as long as I know I'm going to be a little bit off that day, I can take care of myself and not try to muscle through it and say, hey, I'm fine. I'm great. Because when I do that, that's a pure, you know, sign that I'm going to blow at any moment. And then I'm not going to be drinking, which I think is really helpful.
Yeah.
Because every time I would drink, you know, in those situations where I was saying I was fine, you know, at some point the gasket would blow and I'd blow up everywhere. So it will be great not to be drinking and, you know, just really focus on my daughter. Because I didn't have that when I got married the first time. I was just talking about this with somebody. When I got married the first time, I didn't have that, person that was going to help me. My mother really wasn't there for me. So I just want to be that person for her, whatever you need that day, whatever, I'm going to be that quiet patient person as much as possible. Even if I have to, duct tape my mouth shut, I'm going to do it. I just want to be there to support her, and if I can do that, that'd be a win. That'd be a big win.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing now? I mean, are you still working in the corporate world? Are you doing yoga, teaching, a combination of and writing, obviously?
Both, all. I'm busy. So interesting enough with corporate America and is that if you apply yoga techniques and yoga to your life, I found that I have done better in business because I'm less stressed. I'm able to handle my stress better. So I've done pretty well so far, knock on wood. And I'm lucky to work at a really great place, which I won't mention because of a lot of things. But I do work at a really great place. I'm still teaching yoga. The yoga studio that I worked for went under, of course. A lot of the yoga studios did. So I continue to teach on Zoom. So you can find more about that at the links if you're interested. And I'm still writing. I'm working on a mystery novel that I've always wanted to write. That was my initial intent. So I'm excited about that. I'm also working on a book about bringing yoga and spirituality of the wisdom of yoga to work. I think there's some real opportunities to kind of bring those things in. There's a lot of people doing it. I'm actually taking the inner MBA with Sounds True right now. That's a certificate that you can take. So bringing kind of these ideas into the workplace is helpful because people have to work all day and you want to give them an opportunity to feel comfortable and safe in their work environment. And that hasn't always been the case, I think, for people. So that's something that I feel very, very strongly about and drawn to help out with.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to mention your website because sometimes people have trouble finding the show notes where we'll put these, but it's minichangeyoga.com, meaning M-I-N-I,
all one word.
Mini change, like little change.
Yeah. Change. Yeah. Because I used to have a Mini Cooper, but I do believe strongly in mini changes. It's on the cover. Mini Diva. Yeah. And that was my license plate. And I do believe strongly in mini changes. Big changes, are hard to do, but little tiny changes every day are really important. So that's what the name of it came from. But if you can remember it that way. And that's where I post, the stuff about the book, but also the workshops I'm doing and the articles and so forth.
Okay.
So,
Well, this has been delightful. I know we've gone long, probably close to an hour, but I looked up and it was like, by the time I looked up on my thing, I think we were nearing on 50 minutes and I was like, I'm not done yet. I'm keep going. Well, no, we were nearing probably 45, but yeah. So it's been delightful. Thank you so much for your gift of your book. It was really enjoyable. Now I'm sad because whenever I finish a good book, I'm like, well.
Oh, that's the best. Yeah. That's the best thing to hear, actually. But I'm sorry. Sorry for you. It's over, but it's the best thing to hear. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And
it's such a joy to
be here with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, we'll keep in touch online, know where we are now, where we can find each other. And
I love that.
So much. And I'll,
thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.